From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the state's comptroller says an early warning system will be put in place for financially troubled municipalities. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the primary results in the 43rd Senate District, and the governor and his staff take a trip to the Adirondacks. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The New York State Comptroller says he'll institute an early warning system for the state's many municipalities that are in financial trouble to try to help turn them around before things get even worse. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Comptroller's Office routinely audits local governments around the state and has already determined that hundreds are in financial trouble, with more than 300 running deficits and over 100 without enough cash on hand to pay their current bills. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli says his office is beginning a monitoring system. It will identify municipalities most at risk for a financial meltdown.
We're hoping it'll be used really as an early warning system to identify levels of stress early to avoid a crisis. Obviously, we don't want to see in New York what we're seeing in California and other states where municipalities contemplate bankruptcy. That's not something we want to see happen here in New York.
The early warning report will use 9 financial indicators, including the amount of cash on hand and the size of operating deficits, as well as demographic trends like population size and tax growth that the comptroller's office has recently studied. DiNapoli says overall, local governments are taking in far less revenue than they are spending. Statewide, cities' budgets total $2.7 billion, but only $2.1 billion in tax revenue is collected. In recent years, state and federal aid has declined. The numbers show clear economic differences in the upstate and downstate regions. While New York City, Long Island, and portions of the Hudson Valley are relatively stable, upstate areas like Buffalo and Niagara Falls have lost nearly one-third of their population. The poverty rate is high in many upstate cities, and unemployment exceeds the statewide average of 8.5% to as high as 14% in Gloversville and over 12% in Elmira. But DiNapoli says it would hurt all of the local governments in New York if even one were to have to declare bankruptcy.
If there's a bankruptcy, let's take it to the worst extreme. I'm not projecting it's going to happen, but if there's a bankruptcy in one part of the state, that has a potential negative impact on municipalities all across the state. So it really is in our shared interest to identify these problems as early as possible before they become a real crisis.
DiNapoli says the experts in his office will be available to counsel local government leaders on how to better manage their finances or what steps they might need to take. The New York State Conference of Mayors says the state needs to do more, though, than just identify the problems. Executive Director Peter Baines, in a statement, says local governments need help coping with unfunded state mandates, rising pension costs, and declining state aid. He says without changes, municipalities have no choice but to cut workers and slash services. Comptroller DiNapoli agrees that long-term fixes are needed. He says Governor Cuomo and the legislature may have to act.
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution.
But he says in the meantime, the early warning system will provide more transparency to the public about the finances of the governments that they support through their taxes, and he says he hopes they'll become more engaged in trying to find answers. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this is the second time in the studio for you today. The first time we came in, we speculated on what's going to happen in the 43rd Senate District. That was the primary between Roy McDonald and Kathy Marchione, the Saratoga County Clerk. Kathy Marchione won, and we were waiting to see whether McDonald would stay in the race. And you predicted in that first one that he would probably drop out. And look what's happened. We find out now, just a couple hours later, that he's going to make the announcement this afternoon on Thursday. We're talking.
Well, look, the bigger picture is this. Is the state Senate going to stay in Republican hands in blue state Democratic New York because of all the shenanigans and redistricting and gerrymandering and all the rest? Or is it going to go to the Democrats? Now, when the Democrats had the chance the last time, they really blew it. And in fact, several of the guys who helped lead that Democratic group are on the way to the pokey as we speak, if not there. And so I'm going to take a wild guess and guess that Governor Andrew Cuomo does not want a Democratic state Senate. If he did, he would have vetoed that stupid and self-serving gerrymandering bill, redistricting bill, that the Republicans were allowed to do in their own interest and the Democrats in the Assembly, of course. But he didn't. He said when he was going to run that he would veto the bill and they would make it go to an outside group who would be fair and, as I have said a thousand times, not be George Steinbrenner being allowed to umpire the Yankee games. Okay, so now I think it's fair to assume he wants, the governor wants, a Republican state Senate. If that is the case, then he asks the Republicans to go along with gay marriage in New York, and quite correctly, four of them do. They were profiles in courage, as far as I'm concerned, and they deserve all the kudos they can get. One of them was Senator McDonald, and he gets beaten in a primary. Now, I think the gay issue was one of the parts of this. I think also there were other things that redounded to Mr. McDonald's reputation and the rest. I have never been happy, for example, that he has not come on the air on WMC when asked to do it. You don't meet with your public, that's what happens. Okay. Now, with that said, the governor was in a tough spot. The governor said, okay, I will endorse you, McDonald, if you run. Now, the question is, when did the governor know what and when and how did he know about it? And the fact is, I'm guessing he knew McDonald was going to pull out and say that I'm still on the independence line, I am not going to push it and I'm not going to, for the good of the party, I'm not going to do it. That way, Governor Andrew Cuomo had his cake and he ate it at the same time. He could endorse McDonald, which he said he would do, and support him when he needed him over the gay rights vote. He has done that now, but McDonald is pulling out. Did the governor know he was going to pull out? I have a sneaking suspicion he did, but who knows?
What happens in the general election?
Well, if I'm a moderate Republican voter and I'm sitting there and McDonald is actually still on the ballot, I think I vote for McDonald. And the hell with, you know, the right wingers in the party. I think I would do that if I was a Republican. And I think there will be a lot of people that do as a matter of protest. The question is, are there enough people who will split that Republican vote between Marchione and McDonald to give the victory to the Democrat? The original polls in the district, I don't think indicate that that's going to happen. The ones I've been hearing about, albeit I haven't seen them. So if that is the case, then it could be anybody's guess. But if the vote gets substantially split between Marchione and McDonald, the Democrat could be the victor.
You also had a wide-ranging conversation for Capital Connection program this week with Larry Schwartz, secretary to the governor. He talked about a number of subjects, including hydrofracking. What's your sense of that interview?
Well, it's a good interview. Obviously, as the Cuomo administration dispatches folks and allows them to come on to WAMC on the Capital Connection, they are all instructed on how to behave. You know, Andrew Cuomo is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they say it over and over and over again. Last week we had the lieutenant governor. This week we had his secretary, this top guy. You know, it's an amusing sort of story, David. I've been reading about his top man, Larry Schwartz, for quite a while. Good guy. But when he comes on, he says, Alan. And I said, what? What? Do I know you? Well, it turns out that years ago, we worked in the state legislature together for Fred Orenstein, and he was at the next desk. I said, oh, yeah, Larry, that's you. There you go. He's a nice guy. He came on, but of course, he did what Andrew Cuomo can't do himself on the air. He just talked about how great Andrew Cuomo is.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Governor Andrew Cuomo was in the Adirondacks this past weekend to show off the state's recent acquisition. The governor hopes the lands will be a boon to the local tourist economy, but some local officials say the losses from the hunting and forest industry outweigh any potential tourism benefits. More from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The head of the Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board was not impressed with the governor's trek to the central Adirondacks on Sunday and comments that tourism potential in the newly acquired 69,000-acre parcel will benefit local communities. Executive Director Fred Monroe says there's a better way for the state to acquire Adirondack land that would have kept jobs in the forest products industry, kept recreational leases intact, and cost taxpayers less.
The primary concern is the impact on the forest products industry. They're very concerned about their long-term wood supply. Privately, they'll tell you that they're concerned that the state land master plan specifically provides that the state should not buy highly productive forest land because they're so important to the forest products industry. That's the primary concern. The secondary concern is the impact on the culture of the Adirondacks and the economy of the towns and villages that have been very dependent on these recreational leases and hunting and fishing cabins. And the plan is to demolish 200 of the hunting and fishing cabins. And in a place like Newcomb, there's no other overnight lodging places. The governor says this is going to help tourism, and I think he's right if there's a place for people to stay. But if there's no place for people to lodge in the affected town, they're going to stay elsewhere and just day trip into these areas.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says the concerns expressed by Monroe are completely unfounded.
Frankly, there aren't that many people working in all of Essex County in the timber industry. So in many cases, the state taking over and paying full taxes will mean a huge jump in revenue for the community. Tourism will increase in these communities very quickly because for the first time in over 100 years, some of the natural wonders of this property will be available to the public, including the highest waterfall in the park, some of the most amazing whitewater, and that's going to mean new revenue, new business opportunities throughout the area. I think that the loss in timber revenue, if there is any, is very likely to come with the exchange of new tourism dollars being created at the same time, so that the net impact on the park should be a benefit.
Hamilton County Board of Supervisors Chair Bill Farber agrees that the forest products industry is the primary concern, but he's optimistic that the governor's tourism plan will help affected communities.
How do we make this seamless transition for some of these communities that historically don't have a lot of tourism infrastructure, they don't have lodging, they don't have some of the amenities that could make tourism more of an effective economic development tool for their community. And so the community looks at it, and what they see is the loss of infrastructure. And I think it's all about how we evolve this deal in an effective way that makes the transition. This governor, when he says he's going to do something, tends to do it. And I think the simple reality is you need to do more than simply acquire land to create a tourism economy. It's about tourism infrastructure. It's about how we build on marketing the Adirondack brand. It's about a number of the things that he's talked about that, frankly, I feel pretty good in that they've come straight from a lot of the work that the North Country Regional Council has done.
The 69,000 acres of former Finch Prine forest land was purchased from the Nature Conservancy to be included in the Adirondack Forest Preserve. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
An Obama administration official was in upstate New York to join the mayors of three Albany area cities at a roundtable discussion on helping distressed homeowners. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
Statistics show home sales gingerly improving nationwide, but government leaders believe too many families in upstate New York and across the country are unable to take advantage of interest rates that are at their lowest levels since the 30-year mortgage was created. They want change. The mayors of Albany, Schenectady, and Troy met with U.S. Housing and Urban Development Deputy Secretary Maurice Jones. Along with local housing advocates and counselors, lenders, and real estate brokers, they had a roundtable discussion at the College of St. Rose about efforts to prevent home foreclosures. Albany Mayor Jerry Jennings acknowledged that the regional housing crisis extending from the Capital Region down through the Lower Hudson Valley has taken too long to be addressed.
We're sitting down and saying, you know what, let's really come up with a plan that will be effective for all of us and will impact us, but will guarantee that the money that we do receive is going to be put to the best use possible in our community.
HUD Deputy Secretary Jones notes that sales are on a slight uptick, but concedes no one is satisfied.
The president is pushing Congress to act on four bills before it. Two proposals expand refinancing opportunities. The first two would ensure that every family that is current on their mortgage has the opportunity to refinance. The second two are regarding rebuilding equity.
Schenectady Mayor Gary McCarthy sees the rebuild component as a key to rehabilitating distressed housing.
The ideal thing, of course, becomes owner occupancy. And how do you structure those things that create that incentive for people who want to move back into our cities?
Troy Mayor Lou Rosamilia agrees that rehab programs seem the most effective solution to housing blight.
We know we have interested individuals that would love to have this opportunity to work with the city and the government to create for them a home, American dream.
HUD Deputy Secretary Jones would like to see more home buyers and homeowners avail themselves of HUD services.
No question also that we're seeing that those who do, the result is just superior.
More boosts for regional housing. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman today announced the grantees of the Homeowner Protection Program, his office's commitment of $60 million over 3 years to fund housing counseling and legal services for struggling New York homeowners. 35 legal services organizations and 59 housing counseling agencies statewide will receive over $16.1 million to provide free foreclosure prevention services. An additional $3.9 million has been allocated for training, technical assistance, and other support services to assist homeowners in foreclosure. A.G. Schneiderman.
We must ensure that homeowners get the expert guidance and legal representation they need to protect their rights before it's too late.
Governor Andrew Cuomo today announced that the Department of Financial Services is reaching out to help Albany County area homeowners struggling to save their homes from foreclosure by joining forces with HomeSave, a 12-member coalition of nonprofit legal, housing, and community groups. They've scheduled a public meeting for Friday in Colony. In Albany, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. More than 1 million students each year fail to graduate with their peers nationwide. Upstate New York is suffering from dropout rates of almost 30%, and it isn't just affecting the future of students, it's taking a toll on the economy, too. The Innovation Trail's Kate O'Connell reports.
Summer is over, and Rochester students are back for another year, but not everyone will be returning. Every school day, more than 7,000 students around the nation drop out, and upstate New York is no exception. One in five of Rochester students are dropping out before graduation.
It's a crisis. In the Rochester metropolitan area, you have a dropout rate of about 22% who do not graduate from high school in a four-year period. State of New York, it's closer to 29%. Nationally, the number is somewhere around about the same as the state of New York.
That's Bob Weiss, president of the Alliance for Excellent Education. Weiss says dropout rates need to be addressed not just because they damage the prospects of individuals, they hurt the economy too.
You can see there's a clear link that education is the best economic stimulus package.
The Alliance has released a study that shows the economic benefits Rochester would receive if just half of the dropouts from a single class in 2010 had graduated.
You will see almost $20 million in increased earnings. You will see they will in turn have more money to spend, and so their spending generates 150 new jobs on top of them working, plus you will have $3 million in increased tax revenues being paid. And once again, the best economic stimulus package is a diploma. It's clear.
These numbers represent a huge incentive for communities all over the country to decrease dropout rates. And Deputy Superintendent for Teaching and Learning in the city's school district, Beverly Burrell-Moore, says they're working on the problem on many levels.
We're personalizing our schools. We're being more deliberate about working with our students from 8th grade to 9th grade, that transition point, to explain with them and their families about what they need to do to graduate with a Regents diploma.
Burrell-Moore says engaging students early is also important in increasing graduation rates, but they're not giving up on older kids either. Schools are tackling the problem with longer school hours and the help of community partners like supermarket chain Wegmans, which has its HQ in Rochester.
We're kind of addressing the whole child academically, socially, and emotionally. And we also have partnerships. Wegmans is a big piece of that, where Wegmans is working with our schools and offering job opportunities for students who stay on target, who are part of this program.
Rochester is slightly ahead of the state and national trend, but as Weiss points out, there is still a long way to go.
Rochester is doing a little better, but I think it needs to be pointed out that any time that you have one out of five of your students not graduating from high school, that presents a real problem because there aren't that many jobs anymore for high school dropouts.
And some groups seem to be slipping through the cracks almost altogether. A study by the Scott Foundation for Public Education shows that New York State ranked last in the country for graduation rates amongst black males, and Rochester has the lowest rate in New York. Burrell-Moore says Rochester is working consistently with school districts in Buffalo, Syracuse and Yonkers on student retention.
We have no other choice but to get better. We have to find ways to engage our students, involve our parent and families community. We have to build our capacity to produce students who can compete globally. It's for everybody's survival why we have to do better.
In Rochester, I'm Kate O'Connell for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1239. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.